Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Heather?
Good. I'm still shaking the cobwebs off, gotta be honest. So hopefully I can be somewhat articulate today, but excited to share with you guys more about communication. If you guys have been listening to the last several podcasts, you know this has been a bit of a theme, but we always want to listen to what you guys are asking for in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group. And communication is always at the top of the list. And so someone had asked, you know, can you kind of go through what some really common mistakes are in communication and some solutions to that? So if you feel like you're struggling to understand your spouse, to really communicate, and to feel heard and understood yourself, then this is definitely going to be for you. Mark, you want to go ahead and share our win of the week, though, before we get into all that?
Yeah. So the win of this week comes from Jade. She says that today was full of wins. There's been no anxiety, no flooding thoughts, no depression. I not only have been working with Mark, but I've also taken his advice in many of the teachings and looked in some pathways for myself to take, she says. I have fallen in love with Bob Proctor and Earl Nightingale. If you have not heard of these two men, YouTube it like right now is what she's telling you. I'm learning not to doubt myself, to follow more of my conscious mind instead of what my subconscious has been programmed for. Huge wins for me personally. Then, and Mark Johnston, you're going to love this, so shout out to me. My spouse called. We had an amazing chat filled with love and laughter. Then he told me he was planning to come home next week if he can get the flights. And before he hung up, he said, I miss you. Definitely feel like a winner. And to think I was so filled with doubt last week, I almost threw in the towel. My advice, stop listening to that doubtful voice in your head, hear it, and stop it. Even if it doesn't help your relationship, it will fill you with all the confidence, and we all deserve that. Thank you to the Thriving team for all the support. It's changing my life.
That's awesome. So I know, Mark, we've talked about Earl Nightingale and The Strangest Secret. I know we've mentioned that before here on the podcast, and Bob Proctor. It's actually really fascinating because this whole line of thought here that we attract what we think about is kind of what kind of founded this whole business years ago, right? Kind of came together with Jennifer and I talking, and then we're talking about how we're creators of our lives and all these things. So these are really foundational principles to Mark and I here with High Thrive Coaching, is that our thoughts, right, dictate our emotions and our behaviors, which dictate our reality. And so really being mindful of your thoughts and what you're creating. Is that the life that you want to create or not?
There's a lot of big names in, you know, in terms of these sort of principles. I do think that Earl Nightingale and Bob Proctor are certainly one of the more established ones. Earl Nightingale's way back. You know, I'm not even going to guess at the year. All I know is that all the images I see of him are in black and white, and the right. Recordings are all scratchy sounding. So that time period, you know. But yeah, there's some lots of really good names, big names. But yeah, those two have been really influential. And yeah, you'll hear Heather and I mention them. We like those people.
We do. And for me, finding those when I was going through cancer was like a godsend, in my opinion, because I didn't understand up until that point really how those were affecting the patterns that kept showing up for me. And so really learning how to change those. And then when you change what's going on inside, then the things on the external world start to change as well, which is beautiful. And we see our clients.
I don't think I would be here in front of everyone talking about these things without these sort of ideas. So I'm really happy to hear that, you know, Jade really took that to heart and started going and studying some of the things on her own. It made a big difference in Heather's life, my life, and apparently Jade's life. I don't know, did we lost you there for a second. Heather.
Yep.
Okay.
Dang it.
Should we move? All yeah. right. So, common mistakes in speaking with your spouse, the topic of today. You know, I was trying to come up with, you know, different ways to organize today's topic. And I looked at, and this is always my process when I'm writing talking points or creating content. Oh, no.
I'll be back in just a second. I'm going to go.
Okay. It's like I thought I lost it. It's just me, I guess, for a moment. Yeah, but always with writing content, I always like seeing other people's opinions. And I like to read lots of different ideas and then synthesize those with my own and say, okay, well, is this an actually good idea? Is that a good idea? Is this actually accurate? And so I'll question a lot of other expert opinions as well. But with this topic, I just kept coming back to a very foundational principle. You know, if you've listened to us, you've probably heard these things before. If you've studied relationship advice, you've probably heard these things before. I'm referring to the Four Horsemen of Divorce. And the reason why I'm discussing them today is because when you really think about it, each of these are huge mistakes or patterns of mistakes that prevent communication. Each one of them. And if you're not familiar with the Four Horsemen of Divorce, I'm going to give a brief overview and like where they came from. So these are defensiveness, criticism, stonewalling, and contempt. So this was an idea that was presented by Dr. John Gottman. If we mention him enough, but I'll still explain who he is. So if you don't know John Gottman, he has is basically the lead researcher on relationships, founder of the Gottman Institute. He's especially famous for taking couples and studying them for about, what was it, 4 decades, and just figuring everything out, how people work in terms of relationships. But these ideas, it's basically, they're called the Four Horsemen of Divorce because they are the biggest predictors of behavior that will lead to divorce. And among those four, I want to focus a little bit today on that last one, contempt, because even among those high predictors of divorce, this one is actually the highest predictor of divorce, and really causes quite a few issues with communication, speaking to your spouse. Now, maybe this isn't your problem or concern. It's been quite some time in my marriage where I felt like, okay, something like contempt or stonewalling, criticism, defensiveness, where those have really been a consistent part. I actually can't think of a period in my marriage where those have been a really consistent part of our relationship. But even still, if these things are showing up in your conversations, even a little bit, it's something to consider. So we have the Four Horsemen of Divorce. And as I said, each of these prevent in major ways some fundamental communication. And we've talked a little, Heather, we were talking about this last week. This kind of, you mentioned like this fight, flight, or freeze sort of response. And what was interesting is as there's been more research on these four things, it's found that this is often the response that more or less that is going on with this. Whenever these are present, it tends to lead towards emotional flooding if you're not ready for it, which means you're going to have an increased heart rate, tension in your muscles, you know, upset stomach, you're going to feel nervous. So Heather, what's really going on with this? Why do you think these are so detrimental to communication? Why are these such big mistakes?
the Four Horsemen mistakes?
Yeah. Do we, yeah. Or maybe we, I don't know, do we need to spend some time explaining them, talking about them a bit?
Well, you know, after we've worked with, you know, hundreds, thousands of couples now all around the world, just like John Gottman, we're seeing some really strong trends, right? Some really strong tendencies. And so, you know, people here in the group are saying, why are they doing this? What should I do? I need some advice. Advice wanted, please, right? And they're saying, my partner wants out. They won't talk to me. They're in love with someone else. They keep having affairs. I can't trust them. They can't trust me. How do we overcome these major gaps that seem to be between us? And when it really boils down to, it's usually that they fall into one of these four things, right? If not more than one. The criticism, stonewalling, contempt, prejudice, right?
You talk about like root issues and root causes of the problems. I think like I like to synthesize a lot of different ideas and theories. And I agree with you. I think a lot of times it will come down to one of these four. Sometimes we bring in other theories. We talk about basic emotional needs. But yeah, I think you're right that these, when you boil it down to the, and you know, take out all the extra fluff, it does end up being one of these. But I interrupted you. What were you saying?
I would really love to get inside John Gottman's head. I did a little research on him. He was actually divorced several times himself. I don't know if you guys know that.
I hadn't really looked into his personal life much.
Yeah, I always want to model people that are actually getting the results that I want in my life, right? It's nice to say I've studied this and I have this knowledge, but it's another thing to actually live it, right? And to see that they actually have a successful relationship. And so I believe I'm going to get it wrong because it was several years ago that I actually researched him, but he was divorced at least two, maybe three times. And then I think, I wonder, you know, did that spur him into researching, okay, why does this keep happening to me, right? Why do I keep getting in relationships and they're not working out, right? And then what is it really going to take to have a good lasting marriage? And I know that his last marriage has lasted a really good long time. And so he probably is applying these things to himself and has a good relationship now, but he didn't always, right? And so we always want to make sure we're modeling people that have the results that we want to have in our life. If you want to be blissfully in love and you're like 80 years old, walking down the park hand in hand, you know, and just stars in your eyes for each other, then model after people that get that kind of result, right? And learn what they're doing and follow that. But anyway, going back to why do we see this happen so much? That's just a little side note about John Gottman and modeling the correct results, right? And maybe what spurred him to consider these things. Maybe he saw some of these things happening in his own self and in his marriage, and then realized that this is also happening for a lot of other couples as well. So when we talk about emotional flooding, oh, go ahead.
No, it just reminds me of other like really influential figures. And it seems to me like the people who really make a big difference are the ones who struggled with it a bit first. I'm thinking of, you know, Tony Robbins, who struggled a lot financially and, you know, getting results, you know, when he was younger, and that really spurred him to getting more results later in life. Or I'm thinking lesser known name, but within psychology, there's a gentleman named Martin Seligman, who's the founder of the positive psychology movement. But he himself describes himself as a pessimist, and you know, would sometimes talk about, you know, depressive symptoms. While I don't know a whole lot about his personal life, you know, if he keeps saying those sort of things about himself, you can see why it might drive him to say, well, instead of studying how people are sick, he wanted to study how people could be healthy and how people could thrive. So yeah. I like these sort of examples, like, you know, Gottman, Seligman, Robbins, and whatnot. Anyways, just a side thought. And you're frozen again. Up there. What were you saying? You're back. You're frozen just for a moment.
Right. And we always want to talk to people that are real. You know, it's nice to have someone come up there that's had a perfect life, a perfect marriage, never fought ever in their, you know, entirety of their marriage. And maybe they've been married for like 2 months and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to listen to you. But really people that have gone through challenges that we've gone through, and Mark and I really share openly struggles from our past and both in our marriage and in our personal lives, and how we've been able to overcome them using these same processes that we now call the PATH method. Mm-hmm. So with emotional flooding, right, that gets us in a state where we do not act from our best, highest selves. And I think that that's where a lot of that comes from. I was just listening to a psychologist describe it yesterday in his training about what happens when the limbic system is activated, that fight, flight, or freeze response. And he said 60 to 80% of the blood actually leaves the brain completely and goes to the large muscular system and the organs to prepare to fight or flee. And so then we're left with very little blood flow actually in our brain. And he was showing some like processes of how you could try to like increase the blood flow back to your brain. And that might look different for everyone. But the bottom line is that we're in fight, fight, or flees. How many of us are easy to prejudge someone? How many of us are easy to jump to conclusions? How many of us are easy to get defensive? How many of us is it easy to shut our problems out, right? To shut the other person out, to try to create a barrier there, the stonewalling, right? And how easy is it for us to lash out and start to criticize the other person instead of actually looking at ourselves, right? It's supernatural.
Yeah, so I was actually looking at some of the research actually from Gottman on this. And so he's talking about this heightened state. And basically in this heightened state, partners are unable to take in, or very limited in their ability to take in new information. They start to lose their sense of humor. They start to lose their sense of creativity. But if you think about that, like here you have this prejudgment and you're not able to take in new information. It basically makes discussing ongoing problems absolutely unworkable. And this is the thing within marriages is that unless you are really working hard, you know, there are going to be some problems that are ongoing problems. You have different personalities. You're going to have ongoing problems. You're going to need a lot of continued feedback. And so if you're introducing contempt or criticism, stonewalling, defensiveness, and you get into this heightened state, you're really just, it's not going to work. And when this happens, the reason why these lead to divorce is because when this happens too often, the couple learns that these conversations are not productive and they start to disengage emotionally. It's not rewarding anymore to talk about the dishes that are left in the sink or the, you know, disagreements over perhaps how much one of your partners is drinking or parenting styles and things like that. It's not rewarding anymore and they disengage. So
I remember a comment just last week in the podcast saying that, you know, we don't want to talk about these things. My partner doesn't want to talk anymore because I don't think it's going to solve anything. Or they said, my partner thinks it's not going to solve anything. And that's exactly the pattern that we're seeing happen there.
That's actually a really dangerous state. What we learn about, what we know about relationships is that there's a typical arc that they take, you know, and you have those early stages where, you know, the two of you are very lovey-dovey and, you know, lots of building up of the relationship. But we also know what happens as the relationship declines. A lot of relationships will start to hit like a bit of a plateau. And as they decline, there's going to be a little bit more anger, a lot more arguments. But as you go further on, when you start getting that disengagement or that lack of interest, that's a much more advanced relationship that's gone further into deterioration. And we don't like that.
No, we don't like that. But that's why we're here, because we have solutions for those that are in that kind of situation. We consider that the ICU, you guys need, you know, the relationship needs to be revived. It needs some immediate help. It's like you've got a bleeding neck. You can't afford to wait. This is a very urgent symptom of the underlying issues in your relationship, and you need to get to like the ICU, right? And you need to get things turned around quickly in order for the relationship to survive. It doesn't mean that there isn't hope, but it is a dangerous warning sign. Just like if I got cut in the neck and I'm bleeding out, that would not be a good thing. I'd need to go get immediate help. And so if you're in that situation, do you recognize, first of all, how serious it is? And are you taking action to try to get some of that help to get this thing healed and turned around as fast as possible, right? And I know many, many of you are, which is why you're here in the Thriving Marriage group. And that's why you're reaching out to us. And so many of you have joined our coaching and our programs. So that's awesome.
So yes.
Yeah, how do we turn around? So what do we do about some of these, if we're recognizing, yes, there's definitely a lot of criticism. There's a lot of blame. There's a lot of stonewalling. There's a lot of contempt. What do we do? How do we turn this around, Mark? What have we seen work
first? Now, I think it would be really easy for us to say, well, my partner just needs to stop being so judgmental, or my partner needs to actually listen to what I'm saying. But, you know, a lot of good that sort of statement does, because unless they're here listening to us, it's not going to go over very well.
And not even listening, but have the desire to do it, which is not very likely if you're in the situation.
Well, I do like to start off always with the things that you have control over, the things that you are responsible over. And I do want to touch on the other side, like what's going on, okay, if your partner is exhibiting some of these behaviors. But I think to start off, I think you need to, I think that's a really good place to start, is to take responsibility and examine your own biases. If there are problems in your relationship, let's pretend it's something minor. Let's pretend it is something like, dishes left in the sink, or maybe you don't like how your partner talks over you. You don't like how maybe you'd like that they go and work out more and lose some weight. These are all things that you really need to examine yourself and say, why does this behavior bother me so much? This is something that I think I always like to start with when speaking with clients. Instead of assuming that, okay, here's this person complaining to me about their partner's behavior, it's automatically, their partner is the one that's in the wrong. That's not always the case. And it could be like a big thing with how you yourself are viewing this situation. I've talked to many couples where, one partner is highly anxious, has a lot of problem with, with other people drinking. And then the other person says, well, it's not that big of a deal. You know, in our society, it's socially acceptable to drink on occasion. And so, this is kind of the same sort of thing here. You need to examine, why would this be such a problematic behavior if this was a problem for you? Perhaps you have certain religious views. Perhaps you've had some trauma in your childhood. Perhaps you've made some mistakes in your life. And you need to examine that yourself. Are you putting like a strong bias on the situation that may not be appropriate? And let's say that it is, if it is appropriate, are there ways that you can compromise or lessen the impact or live with some of this problematic behavior? For me, we all have nitpicky things that we don't like in our relationship, but I had like a big problem with my wife in our conversations. She would like ask me questions, and I'd start to speak, and then she'd speak over me, and that really, really bothered me. and I would have to remind Jen like that it feels really painful when she does things like that. And I had to, I had to take a moment at some point and be like, okay, is this really that big of a deal? Why does this bother me so much? And I learned a lot about myself. I learned, okay, like sometimes I have a harder time speaking up in conversations and I don't feel heard. And so when I was able to express this and say, hey, I would really like to feel heard, it started, that conversation became a lot healthier. I don't know about you, Heather, but I imagine there are problems or biases that you've had to examine within your own relationships or just in life in general?
Always, always. I love doing this podcast because it's always like so in the moment. Any topic that we're on, I can think of an example like from the last probably 72 hours where something came up about that. But this really goes back to like our story that we have about ourselves, our story that we have about our partner, and the way that we perceive the world, right? And really examining, you know, is that really truth or not? I finally had to ask myself a hard question. I'll just be really vulnerable here. Okay. So we just had baby number 8 a year ago, and I'm working to get back in shape. And I have a big goal for myself. I want to get back to the weight I was when we got married. Okay. Because in my mind, that's where I should be. All right. I'm not going to go into all of that, but a big part of my drive and reason to do that is so that I can be attractive for Ben. But then I never even asked if that would be attractive to him. And that's kind of a sticky subject in our relationship. It's been like one of those subjects you don't really want to ask because, you know, men are always like, I'm going to get it wrong. And sometimes women are like, you got it wrong. And then there's a lot of shame and blame and like, you know, tension about that kind of subject. But I really wanted to get clarity on this. I'm like, if the big reason is because I want to do this to be attractive to Ben, well, maybe I should find out if that even is something that would be attractive to him. So anyway, I had built up this whole story, truly a whole story in my head that I needed to get back to that weight and that kind of shape so that I'd be attractive to Ben. And Ben said, no, that's not important to me at all. Like I built up this whole story this past year that I needed to do that to be attractive to him without ever even asking him if that's really what he thought or wanted. So here is a good example of how I assumed something, right? I assumed that that's what he would want. And so without even really understanding his perspective, I created a whole story about it that wasn't even true for him. So it was really interesting to get to the bottom of that and learn what was the truth, what he really felt, and then I could let the rest of that story go and make better, freer choices from that place. So that's just a small example, but yes, these kind of things.
Yeah. Examining that sort of thing, it really, you're able to get down to like what it was really about and you're able to talk about it and then it's not so big of a deal. Other times there are going to be problems, like in the example that I gave, you know, I just had to learn to live with it a little bit, that my wife would probably interrupt me. And it's a problem, it's something that I'm a little bit sensitive to. And I just had to be like, is this really something that I need to worry about? Because honestly, when I get right down to it, you know, is her intention to disrespect me? No, that's not really what the intention is. And she will listen if I speak up. But right. So sometimes you do have to just live with problems.
And sometimes not.
Yeah, but this is the point of this, like this question or this sort of piece of advice is you do need to examine your own biases. And you have to ask, like, you have to pick and choose your battles. Is this a big enough problem that I'm going to die on this battle? Is it worth dying on this battle, essentially? And if it is, sometimes you do have to really stick to things. But I think in that examination and even discussing it, I think there's a lot to learn. Even if it is something that you do need to push, I think it's important to not go too much on the offensive. So our second piece of advice is that it's instead of going on the offense, make sure there's a lot of validation. Even if you're just kind of saying it to yourself, I think that validation for them, I think that can be helpful if you can just even think that. Now, we were talking about big problems here. So, you know, I want to give some examples, maybe of some extreme validation with, you know, big, big problems. Because even in those situations, I do think it is important. Now, I want to say there's another piece to this, so don't get upset that I'm trying to validate these really big problems, because I'm gonna have another thing to say after it. But let's say that there is something like an affair going on. I do think that there needs to be validation of this. Perhaps this person who's having the affair feels very hurt. Perhaps they feel very disconnected. Perhaps they are feeling extremely stressed in their life. Now, none of these things excuse something like an affair, But if you're going to try to avoid a lot of mistakes with communication or avoid those four horsemen of divorce, there does need to be validation for these big problems. Perhaps it's a problem with drug use, and maybe this person has having a hard time coping with some intense emotions. Perhaps that they are struggling to find healthy ways to feel good about themselves, or maybe they are trying to find ways to deal with some big problems in their life. Perhaps the problem is they're disrespecting you, which is not something that you should allow in your marriage, but you need to come at it with some validation. Perhaps they are also overly stressed and overwhelmed with work. Perhaps they, they are feeling offended from something that you said. But this is the key. You do need to approach these things with validation instead of going on the offense. If these are big enough problems like an affair or drug use or disrespect, which should not be allowed, you have to have that validation with boundaries. And I do think that, if you're going to avoid a lot of the communication problems, it's this balance that of validation with boundaries that you really need to focus on. So a lot of times what I'll tell my clients when we are taught and when I'm discussing validation, the best question to ask is, in what way is my partner's behavior reasonable? Not necessarily acceptable. We don't want to necessarily accept affairs, but in what ways is it a reasonable response to what is going on in their life? Reasonable does not necessarily mean healthy. So I want to make that distinction. So like we were saying, an affair, not a healthy response to stress or a healthy response to feeling rejected or to long-term problems, but it is a valid response to those things. So I thought, Heather, like, I don't know. I don't know if I feel like as I'm talking about validating some extreme examples, as we're talking about examining biases and not necessarily, checking to make sure that, the problem that you are addressing is actually worth addressing. And here I'm talking about validating some big responses. Do you think, I want to get your opinion, is that right? Should we have to validate big mistakes from your partner?
So I'll be honest, when I first heard this from you, and I think I probably had the reaction that most people did of, well, what about them? Why should I just validate what they're doing? Isn't that letting them off the hook? Like, what about validation for me and what I'm going through? Aren't I the victim here? Truly, like, they're really hurting me. This is very damaging. This is very destructive for my family. That's awesome. And I'm tore up about this, And so you're in that heightened emotional state. And what I've learned, though, is there's a misunderstanding that we have about validation. Validation doesn't mean that what they're doing is healthy, doesn't mean that it's okay, and doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt you and that you shouldn't also have validation for what you're going through. Yes. But what validation really does, and I know we've talked about this several times in the last podcast, but it's really powerful because it bridges that gap between I don't feel understood, I don't feel heard by you. And when you say, we've said this several times, but I think it's worth saying again here, that whatever we feel is what we feel. So whatever a person feels is right for them, because you can't say don't feel that way. If they're feeling, shut out by you and not connected, that feeling is valid because to them it's how they feel. And we cannot argue away the way someone feels. We cannot change the way someone feels. But when you say to them, I see that you feel like we're not connecting, I see that you feel like you're not valued here, then that takes the defense mechanism in them down, because now you feel and they feel understood. Same thing, like if someone really validates the way you feel, whether it's right or wrong, good or bad, moral, unmoral, whatever, like take the judgment out of it. But when someone says, I see you're really upset, I see you're really hurt here, I see you're really angry, we say, yeah, you get me, okay, cool. And then that takes the defense mechanism in us down. So that's what we want to do here as well.
It really cuts out the need for things like defensiveness and criticism and stonewalling. if your partner is feeling very validated and heard and like what they are feeling matters to you, they don't need those things. They don't need to shut you out or shut you down on a lot of that.
And I heard some people say that, well, if I validate them, if I say, okay, I see that you're having this affair because you feel like I've been unemotional with you, right? Emotionally unavailable, right? And then if I validate them in that feeling, well, then they're just going to take that as evidence that they're right and they're just going to run with it. Is that what they really do, Mark?
That is a somewhat valid concern, because if done in the wrong way, as in like you go too far with, you know, I'm gonna call it validation, but it's not really validation. If you go so far that you are starting to agree,
yeah,
and accept it, that's going and say this is okay behavior. That's going a bit too far. And you can get into this position where you are then enabling the unhealthy behavior. And this is what we're trying to make the distinction between here. It's okay to validate, you don't want to enable.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and these principles apply with our children, they apply with every relationship that we have. But are we taught these things? No, I was never taught how to do this. You know, if someone really hurts you, if someone really offends you, if someone really disrespects you, we aren't taught, oh, we'll validate how they're feeling so that their defense mechanism will go down so then you can connect, right? We aren't taught how to do that. And even more importantly, like really gauging what works for us in our specific example, which is why it's so crucial that you get the individual help for this kind of situation that you need so that you can learn how to do it and how to do it correctly. And that's what we do.
Yeah, so like we're saying though, we're talking about validation, but balancing it with boundaries. So I do think that a brief explanation on what I mean by that is needed. So I do think that there's a lot of misconception even over boundaries. And I think we make this mistake in our discussions over problems. So when I talk about boundaries, I'm always talking about three different components. And if you've been listening to us for a long time, I've adjusted it a little bit here and there, but I like my current, where it's really boiled down to is very basics. It's basically understanding compromise and consequences. And it's three questions. It's what do we both need? And the important part there is what we both need. So having some understanding of what your partner is getting out of their unhealthy behavior can really help with boundaries. Because the second part is, how do we both get what we need? So if your partner is having that affair because they don't feel loved and they feel shut down, you can't just say, stop having the affair. You have to have some way for them to get what they're looking for, a path forward for that. And so that's always a much healthier approach for a boundary, saying, look, we can both get what we want instead of just saying, here's the wall, you can't do this anymore, I'm shutting you down, I'm having boundaries. Now, some of your husbands or wives or partners aren't going to listen. And so the last question is, how do I get what I need if I'm not going to receive support from my partner? And I always like framing it like this. Not how am I going to punish my partner? How am I going to make them do what I want? How am I going to shut them down? It's not any of that, because a lot of times people might say, well, my partner's having an affair, so I'm going to kick him out of the house. Now that might be an appropriate response, but you need to ask yourself once again, what do you need, and how are you going to get that without support? So if you're saying I need connection and respect. Well, we might say, okay, at first, maybe you are trying to build that connection and respect elsewhere. If it's still not enough, which if there's an affair, I can understand that. You might go to your partner and say, I need more respect in my life. I'm going to need to have some space from you. I'm going to need to kick you out because I'm looking for respect. And even though the result is the same, you might kick them out of the house, the reason for it is very different, and it makes it much more healthy. even if you're validating them, you say, hey, look, I get that you need that connection. I get that you need to feel heard. I would love to give that to you, but I also need that respect. And so if we can't make this compromise, I'm going to need to do this. This is the ideal way to deal with these problems, of balancing that validation with boundaries. And now that we've come full circle, you can see that I'm not just saying, oh, yeah, it's okay that they're having an affair and using drugs and disrespecting you. No, we're not saying that at all. Heather, I mean, that makes sense now, right? Like, once we've come full circle like this, I'm not crazy and, you know, I'm not being too enabling here, am I, when I'm talking about validation?
Right. And what we've seen with our clients is that when we do these in the right way, does it push them, the spouse, further away? Does it cause further damage, or does it usually help bridge that gap and create a healing space where we both understand each other and meet each other's needs?
Yeah, it's usually the second one. If you know, if everything's if everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing and it's going smoothly, then yes, it does bridge that gap.
Right, and if you're struggling with that, that's why we're here to help. So reach out to us and let us know. Yeah. That's what you're going through, and we can help you guide you through how to do these things.
I mean, there's a lot of other things that can be done to navigate these kind of conversations. We don't have time to go over all of them, but I do think, you know, I call them cliche because I talk about them a lot, but I think the cliche I statements are really good. Then,
right. That's again, that self-reflection and mm-hmm. not taking the offensive. It's, you know, allowing you to reflect on what's going on for you and lower the defense mechanism in your partner as well.
I think that validation also helps. You know, another point is, like, don't describe your partner's intentions negatively. If you're validating, you're probably not doing that. If you're setting appropriate boundaries, you're probably, you know, another suggestion was holding your partner accountable. But like, I think if we really want to boil it down and make this really simple, I do think that that balance with validation and boundaries is, like, that's the simplest way to say, we can avoid a lot of these conversation mistakes if you balance those things.
Agreed. All right. Okay. Well, we have one question here that came in from our group. It says, can you get over resentment from not talking to your partner? So I'm assuming, let's see, the partner is resentful that you haven't been talking to them. Reading that question.
Well, we can talk about this from multiple directions. So, I mean, specifically what's being referred to, when I hear resentment, I'm thinking a lot about contempt, this kind of persistent negative view. And so if there isn't any discussion going on, I do think that you need to look at, I'm gonna hit the same points here. Examine your own bias. Is this really something, why is this behavior bother you so much? Like, if they're not talking to you or you're not talking to them, why is that being avoided? Why are there problems with that discussion? If this is a big enough problem that you do need to address it, you know, why is my partner so uncomfortable with these conversations? Or why are they approaching the conversation in such a forceful manner? Why are they so upset? And, you know, what is a reasonable explanation for their behavior? I'm thinking of a couple that I've, you know, worked with for a long time. And even though they're in a much, much better place where they are now than when they first started with me, I know that the husband still struggles a lot with having some deeper conversations. He's expressed that he wants everything to do well and he's working hard, but he doesn't really want to have those deep conversations and talk about feedback and feelings and whatnot. And so I've had to talk to the wife about this and say, okay, well, why does this bother you so much? And we come to the conclusion that, okay, she wants to feel heard and she wants to feel like she can, you know, have someone in her life who cares about what she has to say. And when we come to that sort of conclusion, it became easier to find some compromises here. We also had to talk about, okay, why is it so uncomfortable for your husband to have these discussions? And when she started to increase that validation, it became easier. So this is how you can get over some of this resentment. At times, if they're really being unhealthy and stubborn and they're causing a lot of damage, you need to shift towards those boundaries and you need to say, how do I get what I want without their support?
Right. Awesome.
Yeah.
So those are some common mistakes, some common challenges that we find happen in communication. So do a self-assessment. Find out, what really shows up for you. When you're in that fight, flight, or freeze mode, what do you instinctively go to? Do you shut down? Do you pull away? Do you stonewall? Do you attack? Do you criticize? Do you blame? Do you, any of those? And have that conversation with yourself and be aware of what's really going on. And then, I know we talked about this last time, but before you can really get to that place where, I'm willing to look at my own biases, I'm willing to not go on the offense, I'm willing to validate them, I'm willing to see what they're really going through that made this a reasonable decision for them, even if it's not healthy or right, but a reasonable behavior, and then how to put in the boundaries, is definitely doing emotional processing so we can get out of that fight, flight, or freeze response. And that's something that we can learn. It's just a learned behavior. Just as we get instinctually into that state, we can learn how to program the relaxation response where we are calm and we are centered and we are emotionally in our higher reasoning part of our brain so that we can make better decisions and have these conversations with ourselves, ask ourselves these questions, and then be able to have effective conversations with our spouse. All right. Awesome. One more question if we're good. Good for one more?
Sure.
Okay. Then we'll go to our marriage mythbuster. My husband refuses to communicate in a healthy way. I'm sad to say we are in disengagement in the arc of our relationship, most likely leading to divorce. Any advice on how to navigate that?
The husband is disengaged very likely because he does not feel that conversations are productive where he is going to feel heard. He's learned that he is not going to, the conversation is not going to result in anything that's good for him. So he disengages. What I tell people at that state is, this person is saying, okay, well, it might lead to divorce. And unfortunately, that may be the truth of it, but the way you would handle that is there needs to be a ton of understanding and validation. At that stage, I do tend to say that you may need to sacrifice some of your own concerns and needs a little bit. When it starts rolling, though, you don't want to completely ignore your own concerns because then it feels a bit false, and the partner who's pulling away tends to question motives if it feels too over the top or like fake because you're not addressing your own concerns. But the very initial stage and how you reopen conversation is lots and lots of validation, concern, make their concerns your concerns. And if they feel like that's the case, like that what they are looking for, what they are concerned with is you're right on the same page with them, the tendency is for them to be much more open or at least to speak up a little bit more.
Beautiful. You heard it from the experts now. Thank you, Mark. So it's just like if you go into the ICU, they're going to look at the symptoms. They're going to go deep into uncovering what the root issues are that are causing those symptoms to show up and then give you a tailored prescription right for you in your circumstance so that you can have the best, healthiest results. And so just like it's not a cookie cutter approach to, people that are in the ICU, it's not a cookie cutter approach with your marriage either. And get the right help quickly is going to be vital. So I encourage you guys to reach out to us and you can book a free call with us at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. And we'd be happy to talk to you and help you have a breakthrough in your relationship. If it's on the verge of divorce, if you're kind of in that arc and things are heading in the wrong direction, I encourage you to do that quickly. So marriage mythbuster time. I really like this one. I really, 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 really like this one. Okay. If I marry the quote unquote right person, we will always feel in love. And I'm going to say this is also like we're just compatible or incompatible. I hear this a lot, right? Yeah. So where is this myth coming from and why is it not true?
As you said, it is a variant of some other myths, like the idea of the one true love, or the other end of the spectrum is that, well, this wasn't the right person and we're just simply incompatible. And so therefore we need to divorce. I think a lot of all these variants of this myth, they center the blame of the problem either on the other person or on this unsolvable or mysterious sort of problem, something that you can't really approach. Honestly, I feel like if that's the excuse for divorce, like we're just incompatible, it kind of speaks to me that this person is really not skilled enough or uncomfortable and really facing the real concerns or problems. It's much easier to say, well, this just, it wasn't meant to be, because then you don't have to take responsibility over.
Right, blame you to kind of this fatalistic, vague thing, right? That we're not in control of our lives. It's just not meant to be, right?
It's speaking of a lack of ability to compromise, to take responsibility or be proactive on problems that you are uncomfortable. And it's an unfortunate thing, because, you know, many times if people are willing to face those uncomfortable moments and problems in their life, the end result ends up being a much stronger, healthier, happier situation. I think the most growth comes about when we are willing to do something that is uncomfortable. It's much like strength training. I feel like I repeat conversations. Did we talk about strength training last time? Did you talk about it?
I was so sore last week. I could hardly move for 4 days. But guess what? I did the workout again yesterday. And today I was able to increase the weight and I'm stronger and I'm not as sore. But it really hurts and is no fun at the beginning.
You know, I have a lot of conversations about personal growth and development and relationships that sometimes, like, I have a hard time tracking. Okay, was this a conversation that I had with Heather or one of my clients or my wife? But anyways, a lot of people struggle with this sort of, like, actually facing what's uncomfortable in their life. A lot of people do. You know, and in the terms of marriage, the discomfort is going to pop up at some point. Essentially what I'm getting at here is there's never going to be a right person where you always feel in love. Because you're not the same person as your partner, you will have disagreements, you will have problems, and very likely, statistically speaking, you know, at some point, if you are together with that person long enough, some of these problems are going to be fairly major. It is the nature of a long-term relationship. So the only reason that you're having problems with your partner and not someone else, and I've heard this excuse, well, I don't have these sort of arguments with other people, is because you're not as close to those other people. They don't have to live with you. They don't have that same sort of intimacy. And this is another one of these excuses. Well, I'm more compatible with this new relationship that I met last week. Well, of course, you're not going to have all the same problems with the person. You're not as close or intimate. You don't see their faults. And so this is not a matter of someone being the right person. It's because, you know, it's a unwillingness to face the problems and actually get back into that position of love. One of my favorite things that my wife and I share, we've come to use it more often in more recent years, is it's just this statement of, I like you. Expressing liking each other as opposed to loving each other. Now, I'm always going to love my wife, Jen. But the truth is we don't see eye to eye on everything. We have some disagreements, and sometimes I don't like her. You know, this is usually very short lived. But you know, when we express this sort of statement, like I like you, it expresses in the moment that I enjoy her. I like being close to her. I want more of her. It means something because, like I said, it's not 100% true all the time. Sometimes I don't have those longing feelings towards her, even if it is more often than not that I do. And similarly, you are not always going to feel in love with your partner. But if you are willing to look at some of those things that are causing you not to like them in that moment, it can be remedied and fixed. This is why many experts agree that the most important skill in a relationship is the ability to repair, because they're not always going to be the right person. They're not always going to be compatible, and you will not always feel in love. But if you want that deep, long-lasting, very fulfilling relationship, you will not use that as an excuse.
Love that. So the idea that there is a one and only soulmate, that there's only one and only right person, right? If you were just the right person, then we would always feel in love, leads to heartbreak and despair. And I believe that soulmates are created, that you can have a soulmate where I am so deeply in your soul, you're so deeply in my soul, our lives, our hearts, our very beings are so intertwined that we are truly one. I believe that is created, and I don't believe it's just something that there's only one person on the entire planet that would ever meet that for you. I witnessed as a child, my dad said something about this to my mom. And she was heartbroken because she believed, you're my soulmate. You're the only one in the whole universe I could ever be happy with. And my dad was kind of like, well, we chose each other, but we could have been happy with other people too. And she was just like, oh. And I was probably 11 or 12, and I was devastated because I believed in the soulmate myth. And I believed, like, surely you're the only two for each other. Like, you're the only ones that could ever be compatible with each other. You're the only ones that could ever be the right people for each other. And that really rocked my world. It rocked my mom's world for a while. But I've seen them grow and do this whole, I like you, but I don't always like you, but learning how to allow their love to last throughout the years is an incredible example to me. And so then when I was looking, I understood the soulmate myth, it's not true, but we still sometimes slip into that. So rather than feeling like there's just one and only right person, or that there's one and only soul out there that can be, you know, the one and only one for you, that only leads to heartbreak. So recognizing that we choose to build a soulmate relationship rather than just stumble upon it or let fate guide us to each other.
I like to look at it in this way, in that abandoning this idea actually creates more stability in your relationship, because you could go off with someone else and be happy if you worked really hard at it, but you're choosing this person.
Right.
And I think that makes it more special, personally.
I agree. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today. I was just letting you guys all know you can join the Thriving Marriage Facebook group and leave a comment on any podcast topic you would like us to cover in the future. And next week, we're going to share with you how to handle control issues. So if you feel like your spouse is controlling you, or you find that you're struggling and wanting to try to control your spouse, then this podcast is going to be for you. Thanks, Mark, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.